Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks for this Friday, the 9th day of February 2018. I'm David Ellis with you up until 1 o'clock today. And it's a busy day today. There's so much for us to talk about, so much so that I may take up a fair amount of the first half hour of this program sharing some information with you. The first bit of information isn't good news. It is about the passing of J.B. Simpson, a businessman and long-standing member of the Privy Council. Now, J.B. Simpson was very well known for the supermarket that he operated up in Christchurch. To get a little bit more information on this man and his contribution to Barbados, I have his son, Jonathan, on the line. Good morning, Jonathan.
Morning, David.
Good morning. Tell us a bit about your father, his business background, and how he consolidated his position here in Barbados.
There's so much you can tell him about Barry. I mean, he's done a lot to me, and he's done a businessman in Barbados. I don't think I've ever heard one person say a bad thing about him. He always treated everybody, be it black, yellow, white, red, different, as he's saying, rich, poor. And that was his philosophy, was do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that's what he lived by.
What were his business interests?
Well, Daddy started off, he started off working at the Royal Bank of Canada. And he went to Canada and worked with a company called Pitfield, McKay & Ross, which was an accounting firm, which he actually named his first son Ward. After Ward Pitfield was there. And then he came back to Barbados and he opened a little one-door store from what he could gather in Robert Street. And from there he moved on and he opened the Grosseteer Boulevard, which is where the Scotia Bank was, where he was Sandy, I think Sandy Beach Hotel. That little building is there. And from there he then moved across to Simpson's Food Care, which he built, I think, in the late 60s. And he did so well in the supermarket of that. He was always in the service. He always told everybody, he said, say good morning, say good day. If you're not sure, you said it, say it again. And if you're not sure, say it one more time. And that was what he lived for. And those days then, they started giving the garbage chain a bit of trouble. So what did they do? They bought him out. And he then moved on to Cave Shepherd, where he looked after the ground floor with Jeffrey Cave and Tony Reed. And he got a little bored of that, and he opened Milton Sandacres Hotel, which was the first hotel in Barbados that had a TV and a kitchenette in every room. And he had a long-standing friend, Colin Steele, who actually still works for Gordon Steele there at Sandacres up to this day and still is one of my father's closest friends. And I think it was 1970 or 71, when tourism was at its top, Daddy decided that, you know, I've gotten this to the top. He sold it out to the Malalu and some other. I went on then to build JB's supermarket in Wilde, which he then sold to Andrew Bynum. And then on to JB's Mastermart, which then was bought by the S&T. And then he went back to Cave Shepherd and was a concessionaire on the top floor, and he had a shop in the port. But Daddy always dealt with people. I mean, all the messages that come through his mind, as long as people remember him, on the supermarket floor. I mean, he used to pack me by shelf himself, just so he could meet and greet everybody, every customer, every person. That's what he lived for.
What's his relationship to Kiffin Simpson?
He and Kiffin are cousins, and Roberta, who is Kiffin's wife, the Lady Simpson, that was Daddy's first wife.
Okay, so
Daddy has Wardy and Daddy, that are Daddy's children from his first marriage. Kiffin started working here in Barbados from what I gathered with him at 15th year itself.
And his last days, what were they like?
Well, Daddy, my other sister, my Christine as well, who runs the shop at the port there, he was in the hospital from Wednesday week. And when John Bernstein and Mike McCurry, when they opened him up, thinking he would have gone through the anesthetic, but when they opened him up, Sean told us afterwards that, you know, in America, they would have stitched him back up because, I mean, he was gangrenous, his whole intestine. He was really in a bad way. He said this man should have been dead at least a day ago. But he's a strong, strong fella. I mean, he lived right through till the early hours this morning. We managed to get dialysis done on him. yesterday, which they want to do since Monday because his kidneys were not working, and he got from that as well, but that was miraculous. But then the Lord called for his son at 1:30 this morning, and you know, we can't argue with him. He had a good, strong innings. I don't think he was quite ready to go yet, but there's nothing that we can do. I mean, I just asked my mother, I asked, how are we going to have the funeral not getting snow? Because it could be based on what I'm seeing, he turned out it was going to be phenomenal.
How old was he?
Daddy was 82. He'll be 83 on the 7th of February. And his 51st anniversary would be on the 12th of February. So he had a good time.
Well, Jonathan, thank you very much for updating us on the passing of your father, the late J.B. Simpson. A name that has been synonymous with business in Barbados for many, many years. Our condolences to you and other members of the family.
Well, our family, we thank everybody, and but actually from all over the world. We've had messages from Australia, all over. I mean, we've had thousands of people praying for me. You know what? The spirit of work, because he had a good innings, and he's without pain now, and he's in a better place.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm sure, but you got to fight with it. Thank you very much for calling and expressing your condolences. My mother, Angela, my sister, Christina, Daddy, Wally, my children, our whole family. We thank everybody around the world who has supported us and who supported Daddy. He was born in history as a great man.
Thank you very much, Jonathan Simpson. What else is there to talk about today? Well, the Senate of Barbados this week passed that controversial amendment to the Police Act. And last evening we played for you a report that had been done. I don't think everybody would have heard that report. So what I'm going to do is share that 10-minute report with you so that you get a sense of the debate that took place in the Senate day before yesterday in the evening as independent senators, government senators, and opposition senator Wilfred Abrams spoke about this particular measure because it remains highly controversial. We begin by hearing from Carol Lady Haynes.
I therefore, Madam President, cannot support the amendment to this bill, and I would like to add my voice to those colleague senators who have asked that we withdraw this bill at this point for further consideration and for wider consultation in the community.
She was unhappy with the power to search private property without a warrant and the penalty for using abusive language.
To say that if someone uses, in this situation, uses abusive or insulting language, that they are subject to a fine of $5,000 or imprisonment for a term of 2 years, Madam President, I find that really worries me. And further down, it has a similar category where it speaks similarly in the use of abusive or insulting language, a fine of $10,000 or imprisonment for a term of 3 years or both. Whereas I think assaulting, obstructing, or resisting, or aiding or inciting any person to do those things is a serious offense. I cannot see, Madam President, that using abusive or insulting language could or should fall into that same category.
Another independent senator, Sir Trevor Carmichael, called for the legislation to be sent for greater public scrutiny. But government senator Verla de Pisa, like Sir Trevor, a lawyer, said the police already have extensive powers under several other acts once there's reasonable suspicion.
The Firearms Act, the police can stop and search without warrant. Customs Act, the police can stop and search without warrant. The Theft Act, the police can stop and search without warrant. The Prady Larceny Act, the police can stop and search without warrant. The Road Traffic Act, the police can stop and search without warrant. And under the Magistrates Court Act, they are given the right for certain types of offenses to arrest without warrant, along with stop and search without warrant. But here is the one that will definitely bowl you over. Under the Copyright Act, the police can stop and search. Yeah. Now, think carefully. If the police can stop and search without warrant under this wide range of legislation. Why not put it all in one place, already called the Police Act?
Referring to that controversial move some years ago when the police went into the Pine, Senator DePisa said she wasn't suggesting heavy-handed policing to manage a crime situation.
What I am suggesting is that the police already did it anyway. What the amendment does is place a framework around what the police did, to my mind, willy-nilly before, because it being a common law position, they had nothing guiding how they did it.
And she went even further on the issue of the power to impose curfews.
Under the Constitution, there is curfew because you have emergency powers under the Constitution. Barbados has emergency powers legislation, and the curfew is there as well. So curfew exists in Barbados. We've never had to use it, and so it seems to have fallen out of the minds of people. But there it is, in the Constitution and in an existing piece of legislation.
Senator DePisa then explained that constitutionally the curfew is over the entire country, but in this legislation it would be restricted to an area.
I am certain that there will be constitutional breaches in that area simply because to cordon off an area and institute a curfew will impact on individual rights. There is no way to get around that. You are going to trample on individual rights if you tell people they can't leave home past a certain time and don't come back out till morning. There's no way around that. All of the other things that the police will be able to do within that curfewed area, they already can do anyway. As I stated before, they could stop, they could search, they could arrest without warrant, they could set up cordon. The police could do all of those other things. The troubling one for me is the curfew. You are disturbing people's rights, you're disturbing people's livelihoods.
Opposition Senator Wilfred Abrams said that once a curfew is imposed, any and everyone could be searched.
And the people within that curfew or that cordon area have no rights to refuse. That is where the difficulty comes in. So you are effectively curtailing the constitutional rights of the citizens within that designated area.
He continued.
The difficulty here, Mr. Chairman, is the giving of these ultimate discretions to two people, the Commissioner of Police and the Attorney General of Barbados, where if such powers were to be exercised now, or anything resembling such powers were to be exercised now under the Constitution of Barbados, it would require a two-thirds majority. Why have we shifted from a two-thirds majority to suspend the rights of citizens to simply the discretion of the Commissioner of Police and the Attorney General of Barbados? That is where the fear comes in. I am not saying anything about the current Attorney General. I am not saying anything about the current Commissioner of Police. But the possibility for perversion of this exists. The possibility for victimization, the possibility for abuse of it. If we want to do this, then rather than consulting with the Commissioner of Police, who is the person who asked for it to happen, why not consult with the stakeholders or the wider population of Barbados so that people have a say in it? Why not consult with the Bar Association so that we can have the best possible piece of legislation to effect the best possible result for everyone? Why are we rushing to pass this now? Is there something that we don't know? The powers being given to the police under this, with the sole oversight of the Attorney General of Barbados, are, in my opinion, too great for us to speed this through without consulting. And it does not make sense to say, you know what, if it is wrong and we breach somebody's rights, let them come to the court.
That was the position taken by Government Senator Andre Worrell.
The executive have had their say, the legislature will soon have their say, and if the court needs to weigh in on it, the High Court, in terms of taking it to the High Court for a judicial review, so be it. That is how our governance system works, and that is what we have been proud of as a country, in that we follow the laws, we live by the law, but we are not to be living in fear of criminals. And this legislation would help us not to live in fear of criminals.
Another government senator, Harry Husbands, was also strongly in support of the measure.
So I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever that with the package of measures that I have outlined, that we put under, that I have put under the headline of crime fighting, curriculum reform, creating second, third chance opportunities at the Edna Nichols Center, at Aganar, at the New Horizons Academy, at the school's positive behavior management program, enhancing the facilities for the police and the security forces, and this legislation, that we are doing the right thing in the interests of the people of our beloved country, Barbados.
This move by the government of Barbados to give the police greater powers comes amidst national concern about an upsurge in gun violence that has claimed several lives in recent years and has also left communities on edge. The call to do something about it has left Barbados with a tough choice, as articulated by Senator Verla DePisa.
Would you rather that the state curtails your rights and freedoms in pursuit of that greater good, or would you prefer that the criminal elements curtail your rights and freedoms in pursuit of their selfish gains? That is the crux and the nugget of the matter.
I'm David Ellis. So there you have it, the real dilemma facing Barbados as we call for strong and forceful action to deal with guns in the society and violence in the society. And as we speak, there is a lot of concern about what is happening among the youth in this country. During this program, we expect to update you on a news conference which has been called by the Minister of Education, coming out of what has happened this week at the Grantley Adams Memorial School, and I dare say what happened last week down in St. James, the school bus brawl that took place there, and all the other incidents, many of which have not been reported by the media. Indeed, I believe some time ago I cautioned that the teachers of this country had a greater responsibility to keep violence in the schools on the front burner, because all too often what happens in our country is that when something is in your face, there's an incident, and that is prominent, everybody comes together and everybody's in the media talking about it. But it's a 9-day wonder. It doesn't really go away. It is just that the focus on it tends to die down. We need to see this as a matter that calls for ongoing attention. And it is one of the more difficult issues to tackle in this society. We, people who are offering themselves a political office, can talk about building companies and attracting investment to Barbados and trying to deal with the economy, growth and jobs and all of that. But when it comes to this particular area here, we're dealing with the behavior of the people, the changing attitudes, the anger and the aggression, it isn't that easy to put your hands on answers that are coming from those who are making themselves available. We got a lot to talk about, therefore. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I'm coming back to your calls. Down to Brass Tacks, this person writes to say, the police already have those powers as indicated by Senator DePisa. So what is the purpose of this legislation? It doesn't make sense. As a police officer who worked in the task force, I am still not so sure about this. I believe there's an ulterior motive behind the amendment, says this particular writer. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, I too as a concerned taxpayer of Barbados is very concerned about the apparent draconian measures in the Police Act and your whole rush. As is alluded to, they already have certain powers of search and 50 powers of your warrant signed by the JP or magistrate. Now, in political science, they call this something called the rise of the authoritarian state. It also speaks to the supreme rule of Leviathan, where you make these supreme laws to take control. I'm sorry, Peter isn't on today. The growth children no further, but I'm seeing the rise of some apparent authoritarianism with these with the amendment to the Police Act. They have independent senators, wise and knowledgeable, who were very reserved and cautioned on it. And you also have the Bar Association, a reputable professional body. You know, so one should err on the side of reason. Now, I hope that we don't attract the international body of Amnesty International, because you're seen to be treading on human rights. The Constitution is framed off of the Human Rights Charter of the United Nations. So your constitutional rights, essentially, are your human rights. And that is a matter of grave concern. And the government should err on the on reasonableness and fairness. In the Constitution states, basically, there's a presumption of innocence. Presumption of innocence until proven otherwise. How can you have such a draconian act without proper checks and balances? You know, you're not installing Leviathan or supreme ruler, you know. This is democracy. Barbados is now 50-plus years of independence. And it wrote its own constitution, and the constitution is the supreme law of the land, and it must be obeyed. I feel that these good citizens have to file a constitutional motion, a judicial review, you know. But I think they may also have to contact the they have options. They have your rights, the European Court of Human Rights. You have you also have the United Nations.
Okay, okay, sir. Let me ask you though. At the end of the day, what has prompted this? What has prompted this that you can see? That you can actually see.
I'm seeing
on last year.
Just hold on.
Last year, we had at Cropover a shooting down the highway. Several people were shot. 20 or 21 people were shot. Prior to that, some people down in Deacon's Road fired off some shots that scared many of the people in the area. We've had several people lose their lives by the gun last year as well, and some this year. This is what the government is advancing as the reason for this kind of measure. Now, you say it's unconstitutional, and in those circumstances, we should protest against it. But how do we fix the main problem that they have put before us as the reason for this action?
You can have balance. You can have consultation with the revenue stakeholders. You have the trade unions. You have the opposition. There's real and serious stakeholders in Barbados.
So it's a question of the process. So you're concerned about the process that they've used to get here?
Yes. Yes, that's my concern. Okay? It must be balanced. We should never trump on our human rights or our constitutional rights. Those are paramount.
But you could seek to get a constitutional amendment if you believe that the society has moved in a direction that requires it.
Bring the empirical evidence that you need to do a survey. Bring the empirical evidence and have the populace have a discussion.
I found some contradictory statements coming in the debate, and Senator DePisa, who was very strong in articulating what appeared to be the case for the amendment, then went on to say that the troubling area for her was the curfew. She went on to say that There is no way around trampling on individual rights based upon what was being proposed in this legislation.
That's unfortunate.
Now, to me, it seems as though she was speaking on both sides of this issue. Now, if you recognize that the curfew will trample on individual rights, then how can you, in all good conscience, support the legislation?
It becomes a paradox. If you see what I mean, you're the same thing you're supporting is condemning the very thing you said that you want to support. You want to preserve human rights, but still you're supporting draconian measures that suppress the same human rights. So it's a paradox. So it becomes confusing.
Then she says, basically, you have to make a choice between the state taking away your rights or the criminals taking them away. So either way, your rights are taken from you anyhow. No, right. But for me, it is interesting to hear, for instance, the commissioner of police refer to his own integrity and the integrity of the people who are there today. And that's all well and good. I have no doubt about that at all. But what about the fellow who comes tomorrow? This is the dangerous thing about legislation, you know. When you put legislation on the statute books, you cannot bury that legislation in the integrity and the attitude and the position and behavior of the people who are currently in office. You have to look down the road at how it could possibly be used against you by somebody who is not so inclined. Or you have to take into consideration that the people who feel that way today could wake up tomorrow and feel a completely different way and use the legislation against you. Precisely.
So that's why I'm giving to her in terms of mediation checks and balances and preserve the need to preserve a person's human rights or constitutional rights, the presumption of innocence. And you cannot have these draconian measures, people being taken up. It happened in Trinidad, and the state was sued. You know, there's precedent there in Trinidad, and there were false arrests and so forth. So, you know, you can't go off your nose to spite your face. Something must be done, but you must not be draconian. If you have gangrene, your toe, if you lose your whole leg, you know, it's like using a sledgehammer to nail a name. You must not use excessive. And that's my concern here. Things must be done.
Let's get some other opinions on it. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
How are you doing?
I'm well.
Well, first thing I want to ask you a question. You had a little program was going pertaining to words of past politicians coming up to election. Finished?
It shouldn't be finished. I don't know. I got some more to put in, but it shouldn't be finished. But I've been pretty busy this week, and I haven't been able to put in some others.
Okay. Because I was listening to hear, when I hear the voice of Tom Allen. Anyhow, now let me go straight into this program pertaining to Constitution. When were you involved or started in journalism? We are near around 73, 74.
No, well, after that. You're talking about the 1974 constitutional amendment.
Exactly. And it was a human cry, especially you were getting, you remember the dean of the cathedral. You was getting a sermon from him every Sunday pertaining to the Constitution. The Bishop of Barbados was attacked on the Constitution. And the whole crux of the matter, it was said that too much powers was in the hands of the Prime Minister. The only person I believe that's still around who were legislators at the time would have been Sir Henry Ford on the opposition. I can't remember, but Sir Harold St. John, he passed on. But there are not many. But bring me right back down to this 90-day thing that is going on that is mooted around that the government can get this extended 90 days. As I said before, David, when you go to Parliament, you go there as a legislator. And if Parliament closes on the 6th of March, it means, therefore, that your term has come to an end as a legislator. Now, let me look I don't know if you have an almanac in front of you, but if you look at what is happening between now and the 6th of March, Parliament is going to resume on the 12th of February to carry out the estimates. And it should finish the Friday, which is the 16th. I believe the Senate will start on the 19th, which will be the next Monday, and would finish on the 23rd. It leaves, therefore, the 26th, the 27th, the 28th, down to the 6th. And out of doors, you have two Sundays. As a matter of fact, there'll be only 7 days left, David.
Where are you going with all this? Where are you going with all of this, though?
I am going with this to try to find out. Since you are not a legislator, I want to know when the government, when I say the government, I do not mean parliamentarians, because their term as legislators would have come to end. I have the house closed, you become a lawyer. What I want to know says that you would be having, after the estimates, a government which will be running without an oversight committee. When does the powers of...
What's this oversight committee? Come. What oversight committee are you talking about?
That we're talking about is Parliament.
But the Constitution of Barbados allows the cabinet to stay in place until general elections are called.
Well, I deal with
there is no need. There is no need for no oversight committee in that period.
You don't need, but how about the spending of the money?
The spending of the money is taken. Just stop confusing people, man.
Look,
stop it. Because the truth of the matter, is that by going to Parliament with the estimates next week, that will give them the authority to spend money in the period. Don't confuse the audience with this.
So what they would do?
I mean, what they would do, they have the authority to go to Parliament, pass the estimates of expenditure, and be able to run the government as they see fit, without having the issue of Parliament to deal with, until elections are constitutionally called.
But that is why I am speaking, that you are going to spend money and nobody could question you about it.
But the Constitution allows for that. That's not unconstitutional.
But that's what you're talking about, Constitution. That is why you deal with the word Constitution.
So what are you saying?
When you have a Constitution that put the hands after Parliament is closed in the powers of legislators, who has automatically come to a end on the 6th of March. How they should have power to continue when...
Well,
you
is this
are
one of
elected?
These things that you believe we should be changing?
Exactly, that's what I'm coming to. Don't tell me you're confusing nobody, David. David, if you, when you are elected, the returning officer said, I tonight say David Ellis is a constitutional person to be represented to Michael North East, to be duly elected to go to Parliament. Now, after the 6th of March, he is no longer a member of Parliament. He do not have the powers. So what powers would he have then?
Okay.
These are powers that are vested in politicians' hands. That should not be.
Okay, let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Good morning. Come to the program. Call us at 43-41790. Yes, you're
good
on
morning,
air.
Mr. Ellis.
You're on the air, yes. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. You ever heard of the concept total quality management?
I've heard about it. Haven't heard about it recently.
Well, let me tell you something. Mr. Frank McCorney, one of the best margin directors that the borough ever had, in my opinion, introduced that concept about 25 to 30 years. And that was one of the best concepts that I ever worked under. It was a concept where you look after your internal customers first, which is the workers, and then the external.
Yes.
And you were rewarded for good work.
You said that to say what?
That Barbados in general weren't going that line. I reckon I know that Florida got it under a different name.
Why does Barbados need it so badly?
The weird things in Barbados going, they definitely want that concept. You're going to a store or go any place and just see people lingering about their type of things. You never know to see them things happen that late in Barbados. There's work to be done. You do it, then none in there, you cool out or you read something. But you go in the store, you see people off and off on the phone. You go display, don't talk with the banks.
I think to some extent, Barbados is suffering from a changing in attitude. There are a lot of people who believe that once you have gone to the University of the West Indies and gotten a degree, that from there on, it's plain and easy sailing. You really should be rewarded for your degree, for the time that you spent studying, and you really don't have to pay attention to those things. That's one side of it. The other part of it is the whole weakening of management, and we need to trace the degree to which right-sizing and downsizing over the years has cheated Barbados of a particular work ethic. You get rid of the more experienced people.
True.
You're struggling to see to what extent you can get younger people that you can pay
less money.
And I think that it is all coming together to hurt Barbados right now. There has been no proper analysis that I know of what has been created by that prolonged period of downsizing that the country has been through.
Not only downsizing, getting rid of experienced workers got a lot to do with it too, you know?
Well, because I know, for instance, the police force is a fine example of it. There's an attitude, for instance, that says former policemen, there's no place for them. They're too old. They don't know about policing anymore. And when you listen to them talk, you hear them talk about basic steps that they used to take that in their judgment made a difference in trying to tackle some of the crime and stuff around this country. Of course, technology being what it is, you can rest assured that today's policemen will use technology a lot more to be able to crack cases and that sort of thing. But the older policemen believe that they still have something to offer, but they make this point. When I hear some of them talk, they say, if you tell any of these youngsters anything, they dismiss you. And this is symptomatic of what happens right across the board in the country. Everybody wants to make their own mistakes.
I believe they know everything.
Because they have a degree.
Yeah, because they have a degree. Let's tell us thanks for your time.
Down to brass tacks. Hello. You're on the air. Hello.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. You early, man.
Well, you know, can't all be late. You never get for being late. Lines and lashes and detention.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mr. Ellis, we want to, I didn't call to talk about this, but we want to support you on something that you've just said, which is very pivotal to the social malaise that we are seeing in society. We have an attitude in the last 20 or 25 years where people, you go to university, you could be the biggest idiot in the world. You go to university, you don't even have an A level. And next thing you know, you show up with an MA or MA, MBA or PhD or PhD or something. And you are catapulted into a position of executive management. You do not know anything. You don't have the experience, the background, the knowledge. And there you are, guiding the fortunes and the welfare of people below you without knowing what is going
but
on.
But I'm not focusing on that, and I'm not here to knock people who've been able to get their university degrees. I'm only concerned in this instance with the attitude that some people carry, because it's not all everybody, but I hear people express their view. Mm. Once I have, and the longer they have spent studying, the more they believe that what they need to be paid for is the length of time that they have studied, and that they don't have a commitment to work diligently and in a manner that really boosts productivity and efficiency, because they have already done their work. That's how some people see it.
Ms. Ellis, you have spoken exactly the same thing I was going to say. You have endorsed what I was going to say. And not only that, but you see, if you look across the public sector now, at the executive management level, and you look across at the private sector to a less extent, you're going to see a common, all those departments in government which are suffering from a lack of management skills are headed by people with university paper. Every single one of them, you check and see for yourself. And some of them are people who are way past their prime. They can't handle the stress of a situation because they don't know how to handle it. And we having all kinds of problems. I ask myself, how is it that...
Somebody says to you that your assessment of lettered individuals also applies to the current cabinet and the prime minister.
Well, the cabinet and the prime minister were elected by the people. And the people thought that they were worthy to be in parliament, but that is it. That has nothing to do with me or what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this, sir. Things that are affecting the public of Barbados, the general public of Barbados, because the execution is not being handled properly. When they came into the service, there were high school boys running the government, except maybe the doctors and the lawyers. There were high school girls running the hospital. There were high school boys or primary school boys running the bus system across Barbados. And it was done in a competent and efficient manner. And now you have all these bodies.
The question that we need to answer, though, is this. What can we do to make a difference in that regard? I mean, I draw it to your attention because I recognize that it is part of what we face. It's not the only factor. It is part of what we apparently face right now. So what do we do to get people to realize that basically the country is not going to survive? They're not going to get the livelihood that they want if we continue on this particular path. How do we highlight the people who are doing it right? Because there are a lot of people who work really hard. Every month you will get companies highlighting the employee of the month and stuff like that. How do we do more to showcase those people and to get a sense of what is the benchmark for success?
Ms. Ellis, when he was in Ontario, if you want to enter middle management or any technical area, you have to do something called an aptitude test. The aptitude test was not an IQ test. It was a test, a quick fire test to see if you had grasped the basic knowledge of things like English, math, and the ability to reason logically. As a matter of fact, the test was only about 45 minutes in all. But you'd be surprised to know the number of people who are academically...
So what are you suggesting, therefore?
We have tried it here in Barbados. The company worked for trade in Barbados. We did it down the islands for people who want to move into certain technical areas. And it worked. We gave them the test, and those people who passed the test and were then went on, those people who didn't pass were referred for further training. But one of the biggest problems we have in Barbados right now, not only among the public service, but among MPs, is that many of them are in the public service and have never studied public administration. They've never studied public financing, so they don't know the ins and outs of what goes on in government. I've heard people suggesting that ministers is appoint people to the service, but nothing can be farther from the truth. But that it betrays a lack of knowledge of that. Your present thing you want to make, sir. This thing with the police,
That's what we're really called to talk about today.
Yeah. That police bill that just came up.
Yes.
I see in that an attempt to head off what it would call a transmigration of certain crimes that we are seeing in the region.
Explain.
I heard you mention early on that there was a shootout on Spring Garden. Now, that we've never had things like that before. That was a mass shooting. We've had also drive-by shootings. I read a report.
But before you proceed any further, let me put this to you.
Mm.
We understand what is motivating it. However, the government every day tells all the rest of us how we must follow the law. We must be within the Constitution, otherwise they will lock us up and do this with us and that. How is it that a group of people who, on the one hand, can tell us that, can, on the other, say, you know what, we know that we are wrong, and if you want to prove it, go to court?